Last Sunday, as a piece of my sermon, I shared what I called the four landscapes of my religious and spiritual odyssey. I got a good response to that, so much to what I had to say, I decided I'd return to that story every now and then without, I hope, wearing it out. For this morning, I can boil it down to one sentence. Over the course of six decades, I've gone from borderline Christian fundamentalism to being, as I call myself now, a religious humanist and a Unitarian Universalist minister. Okay, I could boil it down even more by quoting seven well-known words from the late Jerry Garcia. What a long, strange trip it's been. If there's been a common thread in that trip, though, it's that I've always been around churches. I've always been around religious communities of one kind or another. In fact, I can't even remember ever a time when I was not. One of my earliest life memories is standing on a pew so I would be closer to the height of my mother and father and singing with them and the rest of the congregation, oh happy day when Jesus washed my sins away. This was before I could even read. I had no idea what I was singing about, but it was a lot of fun. We cut to last Sunday, and I was standing with those of you who were here as we sang, Blessed Spirit of my life, give me strength through stress and strife. Help me live my wordless creed as I comfort those in need. Been a lot of miles, literal and metaphorical, between those two songs in two settings. But there is a common thread. I've had a lifetime to observe what it is that brings people to churches, to religious communities, across a very wide spectrum of belief and practice. And I can't say even now I've completely figured it out what it is that brings people to those such communities. I picked up a few things. Other parts still remain a mystery. I have to say, even to this day, it's never far from my conscious mind whenever I stand up in a place like this or in a setting such as this one to lead a Sunday service, and I look out and I realize that nobody that's sitting in front of me actually has to be there. Well, they may have made a commitment or an obligation for that particular Sunday, like teaching a class or going to a committee meeting before or after the service or something like that, but the bigger picture is no one is forced to be a part of the whole scene here, and nobody is made, I hope, to feel guilty or inadequate if they're not. Well, I did get some language, some sociological language in this case, about the mystery of why people seek out religious communities. I first came across this language back in the late 1980s and early 1990s, just as my ministry here was getting underway. And this was about the time that the term the third place was being bandied about in sociology circles, and then worked its way into the more common vernacular in such books as Ray Oldenburg's The Great Good Place and Robert Putnam's Bowling Alone. Now, the terms these folks and others were using are actually very self-explanatory. You don't need a sociology degree or even have to take a sociology course to get at what they meant. First place. Your first place, the way this little configuration goes, your first place is your family, however broadly or narrowly defined. Taking the broad definition, your family is your primary set of relationships, usually spouse and children, but not limited to that. It's the people with whom you are primarily bonded, for whom you are primarily responsible, to whom you offer and share your highest loyalty. That's your first place. Second place is the workplace. It's where you go to make a living. Job you have, the career you pursue, that sort of thing. I don't think I need to say more. Most of you know what a second place is. You spend probably a lot of time there. Under right and good conditions now, people can find a great deal of personal satisfaction and meaning in those first and second places. We know that's not always the case. It is a sobering reality that not all families, not all workplaces are happy places. But more of them are than not, I would think. So however much, though, or little, people get from their first and second places, most of us also look for a third place. The third place is one you seek out. It doesn't have the same kind of givens as the first family place. It doesn't have the same kinds of obligations as that job, career, second place. But it can become a very important place of its own. And it can come to foster a very high level of loyalty and commitment. The third place is where you go seeking some greater dimension of meaning to your life, where you go for some greater sense of engagement, some higher or more wider level of human contact beyond the home and the workforce. Maybe where you find some greater sense of purpose, some greater sense of welcome. It's not meant to replace your first or second places. At best, the third place encompasses and affirms your first and second places and also moves beyond them. Well, those sociologists I was talking about a couple minutes ago, they always tend, in their writings, they tend to speak of the third place mostly in civic terms. They write about volunteer organizations, places like Lions Clubs, Rotary Clubs, local political efforts of one type or another, social groups, community theaters, things such as that. All those kinds of third place places. And some of them, like Robert Putnam, are concerned that this kind of civic involvement and interaction is on the wane, hence the metaphorical title for his book, Bowling Alone, as contrasted with being part of a bowling league, say. And yet, in this literature, they don't say a whole lot about religious organizations, though, as a third place, so I thought that's what I would do. For when I first heard this language explained, the terms first, second, and third places, I immediately did think of my family of origin. For their church really and truly was their third place. My late father, with his eighth grade education, worked very hard as a house painter to provide for his family. My still going strong mother stayed home and raised four children, getting by, often scraping by, on what my father was able to earn. My father took a good deal of pride in his work. My mother was devoted to her children. Both of them were proud of the family they were raising, but they needed a third place. And for them, it was their church. My father was named a church deacon, and that gave his life an elevated sense of accomplishment, an elevated sense of respect. He might have to go out and put on paint-smelling clothes every day and work from 6 o'clock in the morning until he got tired and come home, but on Sundays, he could put on a suit and tie and walk into a church, and he was Mr. Eddington Deacon. My mother was, for a good number of years, the church clerk. She kept the records. This, too, elevated her life above and beyond all the day-to-day demands and struggles she was always dealing with. She was in a setting where she played an important role and was much depended upon. And like my father, it was a place where she was well respected. So with all due respect to those who coined the term, I knew about third places over 60 years ago. As I've already indicated, I'm now light years away from the setting I've been describing. But one thing I've never let go of, as I also indicated, is the idea of religious communities with all their human flaws and shortcomings as third places. Which finally gets me to my open house Sunday message, could this be your third place? Now for those of you, and I know many of you here who've already, a lot of you here have already answered yes to that question, I hope you can still stick around for several more minutes while I speak to those who may still be mulling it over or giving it some thought. For this is the Sunday when we especially invite persons who may wish to learn a little more about a faith tradition that goes by the 11-syllable name of Unitarian Universalism, and for whom a UU congregation might be their third place. So if you're checking us out this morning, either for the first time or fairly early on, you might think, well, the community part sounds pretty good. I'm not so sure about the religion part. I can tell you the question does get raised now and then as to whether or not we even are a religious community. I will occasionally get email messages by way of our website that will say to me something like, Reverend Eddington, how can you people even call yourselves a religion when you don't believe in, And that's usually followed by a recitation of all the things the person who was posting the post does believe in. The thing that tickles me the most, though, is when I get the reverse angle message on that one. Sometimes I'll get a note that says, "Wow, this is great. You got a religion going here that's not really a religion." From both ends of that spectrum, there's an assumption about what religion is or is not. And what those on each end of that spectrum are not quite seeing, I would say, is that we are really not an alternative to religion as such. What we offer is an alternative understanding of what religion is and how it is to be lived out. As you may have seen, if you've been here taking in this scene, we kind of behave like a religious body, one in the Protestant tradition even. We gather on Sunday mornings in a house of worship. In our case, it's a pretty traditional-looking one, but with no traditional religious symbols around anywhere. I'll say more on that in a minute. You already saw we have a Sunday school for our children and young people. We celebrate the joys and the milestones of our lives. We attend to one another's losses and pains and sorrows and concerns. We even put forth sermons. Beyond what you see here, we act like a religious community as well. We have social events and discussion groups and meditation and spiritual growth groups, along with committees and a governing board and all those types of things that most churches have and do. One difference, though, is that we do not ask those coming into our community to sign on to a predetermined or prescribed set of beliefs as the price of admittance, which gives rise to some of those website messages I just mentioned. Because for those persons who are sending us those messages, I would have to say that for them and for most folks, religion is a noun. For us, however, it is more of a verb. One of our more gifted ministers, and who very tragically recently passed away, left us with a definition of religion that has become something of a mantra for us within our UU, greater UU family. His name was Forrest Church. He was the son of the late United States Senator Frank Church. And Forrest said that religion is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and knowing that we will die. A little wordy, typical UU type statement, but listen to it again. Our human response to the dual reality of being alive and knowing that we will die. Religion, then, is about how we respond to our awareness of being alive, to our awareness of having a precious and fragile life, and knowing that this precious and fragile and holy life will not be ours forever. It is with this understanding that I can say without hesitation that you were invited to a gathering here of a religious community. For what we seek to offer is a setting where you may pursue personal wholeness, where you may pursue a relationship with that which is greater than yourself, whatever you feel it to be, where you may discover and then attend to all the things you care most deeply about in this time-bound life we're each all given. Have you ever been on an airplane where there's a layover at the airport and you're staying on the continuing flight? Sometimes in that situation, the captain or an attendant will come on and say, "For those of you who are continuing on with us, our ground time here will be brief." I would submit to you that truer words have never been spoken. For we who are in the midst of our life travels, our ground time here is indeed brief. That's how we live our ground time. And what kind of a more just and safe and peaceful world we live for those whose ground time will outlast ours. That's what the religious and spiritual journey is all about. It's what the dance of life is about. You're invited to come and join the dance. I said earlier, we have no prescribed set of beliefs and we display no traditional religious symbols. This hardly means we have no beliefs or convictions. Our belief is that as you take part in the dance of a liberal religious community, as it becomes your third place, you will discover and live out those things, those ideals and principles and values you hold most dear, and that will make your ground time most meaningful. What we do offer, it's not a complete blank slate, what we do offer and affirm is a set of seven principles, a statement of moral and ethical affirmations. They're inserted in your order of service for today. These are the values we hold in common. These are the goals we strive to achieve, both individually and collectively. What we leave to the individual is the personal set of beliefs that lead you to these common affirmations. Well, I will quickly touch on two of the biggest questions I get from those inquiring about us. Not surprisingly, they're about God and Jesus. You probably will not hear the name God invoked in a UU service as much as you will in a more traditional worship setting. That does vary from one congregation and one minister to the next. This is not because we have ruled the term out. Some of us relate to it better than others. But rather, it's because God means different things to different ones of us. Few of us understand God to be a supernatural supreme being who can intervene in human events or in the workings of nature, like, say, diverting a hurricane or making a cancer disappear. But many of us do believe or sense the reality of a force or a power or a presence that is greater than ourselves and that is both within us and beyond us. Some of us call that the spirit of life. We sing about it here practically every Sunday. Others call it the life force. Others call it God. Others stay away from names altogether. Because it is how we find and live in a greater relationship with one another and with whatever we may sense that larger reality to be. That is far more important to us than whatever terminology may be used in speaking to it. Now, about Jesus. I did say that our behavior, our way of being as a religious community, is like that of most churches or religious bodies in the Protestant Christian tradition. And that is because our historical roots are in that tradition. The 16th century Protestant Reformation remains one of the most defining events in the history of the Western world. We are a product of that multifaceted, many-faceted event and happening. But we no longer regard ourselves as a definitively Christian body, even though some of our congregations maintain a liberal Christian identity. The person of the human Jesus does remain with us, but as part of a larger mix. It was one of our Unitarian ancestors, a fellow named Thomas Jefferson, who drew a distinction between what he called the religion of Jesus and the religion about Jesus. The religion of Jesus has to do with the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth, as best we can discern them through all the mists and uncertainties that surround it. This religion of Jesus is actually a universal one, centered around a loving God, and one that held forth the principles of love, justice, compassion, and healing. These are the same principles, the same values that find expression in those purposes and principles you see before you. By contrast, the religion about Jesus is the doctrines and the dogmas that later became attached to his life. I'm working my way right now through a book called Jesus Wars. It's not so much new information for me as it is a reiteration of things I already knew, but it's put together in such a way that shows just how horribly and hideously bloody it got at times in the battles to define who the quote-unquote real Jesus was. It was terrible enough at times as I read this book. I'm about halfway through it. I'm reading this book and I have to wonder, wow, if Jesus could have actually seen all the battles that went on, all the people that got killed, all the blood that got shed over who he was or was not, he may have wondered if it was the best idea for him to show up or not. Well, be that as it may, and was, and at times is tragically still with us, I feel right in saying that all UU congregations and their members try to live out the life and the teachings that Jesus exemplified, whether his name is ever invoked or not. As I said a moment ago, we regard Jesus as one of many great teachers of humanity, along with Moses, Buddha, Muhammad, hosts of others, who tried to call us to our higher and better selves, who tried to show us the ways of love and justice and compassion for our fellow human beings, and who taught us to care for this fragile planet upon which we live our ground time as well. We are a religious community, We are a human community. We try to live out the best in humankind, knowing that sometimes we also fall prey to the flaws and the failings that human beings are prone to because we are, well,